There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 264. Going to talk some more fantasy baseball, a couple injuries that have taken place, some targets throughout drafts, and much more. And in order to do so, I have a special guest of the show. You can find him on Twitter at CTowersCBS. All of his great work over there at CBS.com. Chris Towers, how are we doing?
Good. I always feel a little uncomfortable when I'm referred to on another person's podcast as a special guest because I feel like it sets the expectations way too high. But I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you trust me. You are a special guest, but don't worry about the expectations because people that have listened to me long enough, the expectations aren't high. So we're good. We're very good. And we just like to have fun, talk a little baseball, throw a fantasy angle on things. And I know you can definitely do that. We'll jump right into it. We were talking about it right before we started. The news that broke minutes ago, half an hour ago, give or take, kind of came out of nowhere, it felt like. But Noah Syndergaard is going to have Tommy John surgery. Obviously, he's going to be out for at least a year or so longer. I guess it works with a delayed season. It kind of helps make that decision easier. But in the end, he needed it regardless. I already adjusted my rankings. He's obviously gone. How do you mentioned writing an article right before we jumped on here. What's your takes from the Thor injury?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about like a dynasty league, one thing that makes it interesting is now he's going to be coming back from Tommy John surgery probably around mid-May of 2021 in a walk year, assuming they don't sign some kind of extension. So it's going to be really interesting to see what that means for his long-term value, both in real life and fantasy baseball. But, you know, the initial reaction is it stinks. The Mets don't exactly have a ton of rotation depth, so the people who are going to be stepping up and taking that rotation spot aren't exactly super exciting for fantasy. I guess what we were looking at before the injury was probably a mixture of Steven Matz and Michael Wacha as the number five starter, and now I guess both of them have rotation spots. And, you know, if you've already drafted and Steven Matz is on waivers, he's an okay guy to claim. He goes through these periods where he shows upside and then doesn't come through with it. But, you know, last season we did see, you know, a strong finishing kick and he was throwing his slider more often. So there might be some potential there. But, you know, if I'm looking for guys who might be available on waivers to replace Noah Syndergaard or guys in the later rounds, if you're in a slow draft, you know, I've got some other names that I like more than Steven Matz.
Yeah, no, Matz is one of those guys that there's a camp that's in on them. I kind of like him. I liked what he did in this second half adjustments. We saw a better pitch mix with Matz, but we've also never seen consistency with Steven Matz per se. So that's kind of the struggle there. So I totally get if there's other options. He's definitely a later round target. Would you rather, just sticking with the Mets for fun here, would you rather have a Rick Porcello or a Steven Matz?
I've drafted Steven Matz this season, and I have not drafted Rick Porcello. So that probably answers the question.
Bingo. Bingo. Yes, Porcello for me is just an innings eater in a super deep league. That's where it's about all I could think of there. But yeah, Matz I'm on board with. Kind of locks up a spot, and I would not be running to go pick up Michael Wacha, I'd say that much.
But, no, not me either.
Yeah, that's a rough one. Let's talk Chris Sale real quick. We kind of knew these things, this surgery might be coming. It was a scary situation because he got shut down towards the end of last year. They kind of babied along. They were trying to do everything they could to pitch, and then finally they decided to just have surgery. And it was kind of a weird deal because he was some perceived as a value in drafts. Some he was undraftable. Now he's having the surgery. Any thoughts on that? Because it broke right after my last episode on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, it's super unfortunate. It did feel sort of inevitable, but I was still holding out hope. And, you know, in the initial aftermath of him being shut down with that flexor strain, I did some research, and I think it was something like only 20% of flexor strain diagnoses in Major League Baseball. I think it was from 2011 to 2017 was the study I saw. Only about 20% of them ended up having Tommy John surgery. So, you know, I thought there was a chance that he could avoid that. Clearly that was wrong. And, you know, my initial reaction was, well, if he's there around 100, maybe I'll consider him. And then I was doing, I think it was the Raz Slam. My pick came up and it was like 123, and I just couldn't do it. And then it came back to me at like 140-ish. And I couldn't bring myself to pull the trigger on him. Then once he did start up that throwing program early, was that last week?
A couple weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks have felt like a year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, man.
When he started that throwing program, you know, I was doing another slow draft with some people in the office, 14-team league. It got to me at like 94th overall, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a chance on Chris Sale. And he had Tommy John surgery literally, or they announced Tommy John surgery literally the next day. So I was willing to take a chance on him as a value because the upside's so high, but I wasn't in on him coming into the season, I guess. I was willing to take him if the value was there, but now I'm just worried that he's never going to get back there because the thing you usually see with starting pitchers is as they get older, they start to lose some life on the fastball. They start to use those secondary pitches more. You know, we're seeing that with Clayton Kershaw. He's almost I think his slider is his most used pitch now. Yeah. And that's basically true of everyone except Bartolo Colon and Lance Lynn. You know, this is pretty much how all starting pitchers age. With Chris Sale, you know, the slider's amazing. The changeup is kind of okay. It wasn't great last season. And so now I'm worried, you know, next time we see him, he's going to be, what, 32? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what Chris Sale's going to look like as he gets older coming back from this.
Yeah, it is a major concern because there's two camps. There's the camp that's, you know, always been wondering the way he throws, how he's not had surgery before. People are predicting this, like, you know, bad people predicting injuries. But he finally had it. Now you have to wonder, like you said, how is he going to bounce back? Kershaw's a great example. When that velocity has kept dropping, you're wondering, watch Madison Bumgarner. That's another question mark. We've seen his velocity continue to drop. And I've always been, as a Giants fan, watching him for so long, I always knew he was like so competitive that he would learn how to pitch instead of throw. We're still trying to see if that's going to happen, though. And that's an interesting – like Kershaw learned how to pitch very, very well. And he's very, very good at that. But can Sale do it? That's a great point. Does he have 2 to 3 other pitches besides a fastball to make it work? And that'll be very interesting to find out. Just real quick, you mentioned, you know, Sale became a value. Everyone's got a price. You know, the old Ted DiBiase, everyone's got a price. James Paxton is a guy that, you know, some people, they liked him as a value. Then he gets hurt. And now with the shortened season, looks like he'll be good to go. Are you a guy that's willing to buy back in on Paxton? Or are you still really concerned about his constant injury history?
I don't have any shares of Paxton. it's not necessarily a stance that I've taken. It's just never reached a point where I'm willing to draft him. It's not just the injury history for me, because, you know, that's something that I think, you know, you look at the game logs over the last few seasons, it was 28 starts in 2018, 29 starts in 2019. That's okay. And, you know, I think 2017, he might've gotten hit by a line drive and missed time. So it wasn't necessarily like these constant recurring injuries that were costing him a ton of time. The issue for me is just, I'm not sure that he's going to give you a high level of value when he's on the mound. You know, it's been a high 3 ZRA, 3 of the last 4 seasons. I know the peripherals have been better, but, you know, it's pretty consistently him underperforming those peripherals. And, you know, now that he's a fly ball pitcher pitching in Yankee Stadium, I kind of think that's always going to be an issue. So that's why, for me, I haven't really been reaching for him, because I just don't know if there's ace upside there.
Yeah, that's fair. It's very fair. It's one of those with him, it's when he's on, he's very, very good. It's just a question of when's he on. It's in a shortened season with volatility being that much more of a good or a bad thing. You really want that the spikes to not really get you in the wrong direction type thing on a shortened season. That could stink with Paxton at times. So it's an interesting thought process there. We hopefully someday see baseball this season. Lastly, let's talk about the two Yankee outfielders. It seems like every episode there's some new news on these guys, so I bring them up again because it's just – they're mind-boggling. But Giancarlo Stanton, the reports are coming out. If we had games right now, spring training games, he'd be good to go, but we know how that goes. And then Aaron Judge comes back, apparently had a collapsed lung. That's healthy. That's a new one. It seems like there's a new injury every time we hear about Aaron Judge. The MRI on the ribs show positive healing. Again, if we don't play until June or July, he, on paper, will be good to go, but we don't know yet. So Stanton could play today. Judge is still a little bit of ways. Do you prefer either one, or are you just avoiding both?
I'm all in on Stanton this year. For me, he's a guy that I'm drafting in as many places as I can, because I just view him as someone, when he's healthy, which, granted, you know, we know how that's gone, but he didn't miss a single game because of injury in 2017 or 2018. I feel like that's kind of forgotten. He was the number two hitter in Roto Leagues in 2017, behind only Charlie Blackmon, I believe. And in 2018, I believe he was like number 18 or 20 in Roto Leagues. So for me, the floor, if he's healthy, is so high. Even in an era where a lot of people can hit for power, there aren't a lot of guys who can hit for the kind of power Giancarlo Stanton or Aaron Judge can hit for. But I tend to view injury prone as a descriptive term and not necessarily a predictive one. And so in Stanton's case, it's a lot of soft tissue injuries. Last season, especially, it was concerning that he had that. I think it was a quad strain that led to a knee injury. That's a concern. But I don't know. I just look at it and I think, man, if he's healthy, he's going to give me second or third round value in that lineup. And I was looking at his NFC ADP earlier today, and in the month of March, it's like 83rd overall, 2 spots ahead of Jorge Soler. Jorge Soler was awesome last year, but Jorge Soler last year did a good Giancarlo Stanton impression. We didn't get to see Giancarlo Stanton, remember, with the juice ball, or with the extra juice ball from last year. So I'm very willing to draft Stanton and just hope he stays healthy at that price. Judge, given the fact that his current injury seems more serious and he struggled to stay healthy himself, he doesn't have the track record that Stanton does, and especially the perception that Stanton does. But, you know, one of the things that I think has helped Aaron Judge's perception is his injuries have come later in the season for the most part. I think there was he had broken hand bone, I think, early in 2018, maybe. But for the most part, they've kind of run through the end of the season rather than killing you in May and June. And I think that changes the perception of how people view players with injuries.
That's a great point. That's a really good point, because at least, you know, people go into seasons going, okay, I have Aaron Judge to start the season, and we're going to go from there. Where Stanton, he gets you so early in the year and makes you scramble right away. And it's kind of tough to get that bounce back from him, because Judge, even in the last 2 years, he played like 102 games and 120 20 or something. Yeah. He had 27 home runs in both seasons. So he's like, you look at the ISOs and all that stuff, he still is very, very productive. Very, very productive, but he just couldn't put a full season together. Where Stanton, it's kind of like all or nothing with him, it feels like sometimes. The all is unworldly. It's outstanding, but that nothing just gets you good. So, and I was with you. I was really buying in on Stanton because I was the discount, you know, fourth, fifth round, even sixth round in some drafts. I thought for a player of his caliber, okay, that's a discount I'm willing to take. And right now you get him at a bigger discount, but if you look at like the last week or so in ADPs, he's slowly making that climb back up. I saw auction drafts over the weekend. Him and Judge both went for, I think, 17 or 18 bucks, which I still think is a discount.
Yeah.
But they were definitely in line with like Tommy Pham's of the world. So it's an interesting dynamic. And given, as you know, auctions can be different than just a regular snake draft, but it was kind of telling to see those prices.
Yeah. But you know, the thing for me with both of these guys is even in an era of, you know, Eugenio Suarez almost hitting for 50 homers last season, I think like Pete Alonso set the rookie record for home runs. I don't think he's in the same universe as Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge when it comes to just the raw power that he can generate. He just doesn't hit the ball as hard as those guys. When you're talking about Stanton, Judge, maybe Miguel Sano, maybe Joey Gallo, Nelson Cruz, like there's only a handful of guys who really have, like if you're talking 99th percentile, guys who can hit 55 to 60 home runs. Stanton and Judge are among those.
Yep, totally agree with you there. You look at their max exit velocities, it's not their average, and it's ungodly what they put out there when they hit a baseball. The one good thing during, there's occasionally good things through this time was we sit at home and do things, but MLB Network is replaying the World Baseball Classic, and watching Stanton's home run in San Diego was just a laser, an absolute just bullet off of his bat that not many guys can do. So that was pretty crazy to see there. But hopefully we'll probably talk about these guys again in the coming episodes as there's going to be more information coming out, and hopefully I get to see them play sometime this season. But let's talk about one of your recent articles over at CBS, and I'll let you talk about it here first. You drafted a player from each round and formed a team out of this, 23 rounds and whatnot. Why don't you let everybody know kind of what the exercise was here?
Yeah, I basically decided to go through ADP and just go like 1 through 12, 13 through 24, all the way down, breaking up into each round and just looking, trying to identify my favorite player to pick in that range. Early on, it's a little difficult because every first rounder is pretty good. I'd be happy to end up with all of them. So, you know, once you get through the first couple of rounds, then it starts getting into, you know, ADP starts to matter a little less. It starts to be more about your personal preference. And so that's when it gets fun. And so I think it was 23 rounds, 41 players total, because some rounds had two or three that I really liked. And you can find that on cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. It should be up in the covers still. And, you know, I think it was a good exercise, especially as we got into the later rounds, to kind of identify those guys that I'm even willing to reach for, let's say, not just draft them at their ADP, but, you know, go out and get a guy two rounds before he's supposed to, you know, quote unquote, supposed to go off the board.
Yeah, I love articles and exercises like this because something I love to preach, I've done all draft season, is know the player pool. That's why I like mock drafts. That's why I like, you know, if you don't want to do a mock draft, you want some skin in the game, go do a best ball, whatever you want to do. Because like you said, these early rounds, you could take anybody. Like, they're all going to be really good. You know, you do have preferences on certain guys, sure. But in the end, you're going to end up liking pretty much most of the players in the first few rounds. But as you get deeper in the rounds, like your roster construction, can I take this guy now to still get this position covered later? So on and so forth. Exercises like this make you think about it and really put it through there. So I really like it. And that's why I figured if we could just go through this real quick, and you could either pick the same guys you took or you could have some fun with whatever you want to do. I'll just give 2 cents on guys that I kind of see 1 through 12. For the listeners, you used Fantasy Pros ADP, so I pulled that up. We'll go 1 through 12, and why don't you let everybody know who your first choice is 1 through 12?
I mean, it's tough, but because they're all good, but I think probably the best value in the first round is, I really like Trey Turner at number 11. You know, when we talk about this season, something one of my coworkers, Scott White, has talked about a lot this year, You know, he says stolen bases and starting pitcher are the only true currency in fantasy baseball in 2020. That's kind of his manifesto right now. And it's not just that, like, those are the only things that matter, but those are the premiums that you're probably going to have to pay up for in a draft. If you want to come out of your draft feeling good about them, you can, you know, obviously, especially at starting pitcher, you can wait, and you probably, because we see injuries all the time, as we're talking about earlier, you know, you can come out of your draft okay. But, you know, when you're looking at this season, I think Trey Turner, whether he hits first in the lineup or whether he hits third, you know, I think that impacts the stolen base ceiling. But I think people are looking at the raw numbers for him last season and not quite realizing that he did miss some time, and the stolen base total was disappointing. But how many guys could hit 25 homers and steal 50 bases in a season right now? It's pretty much just him and Adalberto Mondesi, right?
Totally, yeah.
And Turner is probably going to hit 290, whereas Adalberto Mondesi might hit 240. So that's the – Trey Turner might be the most unique player in fantasy right now in terms of his ability to give you those elite stolen base totals without hurting you elsewhere.
No, I like that a lot. Turner's been a guy I've been huge on for quite a while now. You mentioned the power that people, I don't think, appreciate with a guy like Trey Turner. He's got more power than people think. Like 20, 25 homers is not like out of the realm for a Trey Turner. He's actually very good in that regards. And then you throw in 40 plus stolen bases. It's just something you don't see anymore in this era of baseball. And it's a game changer. And it's always a fun conversation in the first round. You get the big three up top, the big three outfielders, Acuña, Trout, Yelich. But then when you get down towards the back end of the first round, you usually get the big three shortstop in Lindor, Story, and Turner. And it's funny kind of hearing all the different, I wouldn't say arguments about it, because it's more like personal preference on the three guys. And the way I've always looked at Turner is the power-speed combo, the five categories he's going to fill for you are tremendous. Story and Lindor are very close. Have you found yourself always taking Turner in this grouping, or do you ever grab a Lindor or a Story?
I think I've taken Story more than Lindor. It's so tough to figure out how to handle those two guys in particular, because Lindor is in such a weird spot where you kind of look at like the OPS, really. He doesn't really stand out. You know, he's a good power hitter. He doesn't really hit for a great average. He hits for an okay average. But then like the sum total of his production comes together and it's really good. But he doesn't necessarily like stand out in the way that Trey Turner does. So I guess for me, I would rather grab – that's a little unfair for Francisco Lindor, because he usually is a huge standout in runs in particular. But for me, it's Turner. I know he's an A-plus in at least one category and probably not worse than like a B-minus in any other ones. And I think I'd rather have that than like the B-plus across the board.
No, makes total sense. Totally agree with you there. So I'll be with you on Trey Turner. That's a guy I really like. So I tried to get my steals early in drafts. Yeah. Your co-host, Mr. is quite accurate on that, as you've probably noticed as well. Elite pitching and stolen bases is quite the thing these days. So Trey Turner is a pick I would like quite a bit as well. So round two, 13 through 24. This one's really easy for me, but it's because I'm a fanboy of a pick here. What is your next pick in this range?
I'm really curious to hear what yours is. For me, it's Freddie Freeman. And I think it's there are maybe six pure hitters who are better than Freddie Freeman. And most of them go in the first round. And most of them go in the first half of the first round. The thing I love about Freddie Freeman, though, since he made that jump, I think it was after the 2016 season, and really maybe it was in the 2016 season and really became a legitimate power hitter. I just feel like he's a little undervalued. You know, he had the one season where he was dealing with a wrist injury, said at the end of the year, I think it was 2018, said at the end of the year, I felt like I was swinging a wet newspaper. But other than that, he's been pretty consistently an elite batting average source. He's going to drive in and score a ton of runs in a really good Braves lineup. And he's going to hit close to 40 home runs while not being a zero in steals. I think he basically gives you what Nolan Arenado does, but with the potential to actually even steal 8 to 10 bases.
No, I like that quite a bit. I'm a big Freddie Freeman fan, and what makes Freddie better, or at least more important, is that first base position kind of drops off after the elite tier. And I don't know if you've experienced this or not, but I know I've been in a few drafts where I'm sitting there going, okay, I'll get one of these guys coming around the corner, and they both go, and then I'm sitting there looking at, like, Daniel Murphy. And that's not a place you want to be. It really isn't. So, yeah, it makes sense getting a Freddie Freeman early. I can feel you there.
Who was your guy in this round?
My guy is Jose Ramirez. I know.
Okay, yeah, love that.
Yeah, I know not everybody, like, there's still skeptics here. And I've already heard the arguments that he's a slow starter and all these things. I really don't care. What he did towards the end of last year was the J-Ram we remember. He was battling injuries and all kinds of other little things. I believe this is a guy that another power-speed combo, obviously not the Trey Turner speed combo, but a guy that can get you 30-plus homers and steal you 20-plus bases at the third base position, which is deeper than first base. But still, you mentioned Arenado numbers. You know, he's got more power than J-Ram, but not by like a boatload. And steals can offset a lot of that difference there. So instead of taking like an Arenado at the 10th pick and getting a J-Ram at 12, Jose Ramirez is a guy I absolutely love, and I've been trying to grab him everywhere. I'm a big fan.
He was pretty much the consensus number three pick this time last year. And what I like to do when a player has that kind of mid-season surge is find out if there's a reason to believe in it. And in Ramirez's case, he's talked very openly about he was trying to beat the shift. He was getting shifted a lot. And the first half of last season, he really tried to hit the ball the other way. And it just kind of ruined his swing. You know, he was popping the ball up a ton. He wasn't driving it. You know, he generates most of his power to the pull side. And once he got back to just trying to hit the ball as hard as he can, the way he naturally does, he looked like himself again. You know, it was like 1,000 OPS over the last 50 something games, I think.
Yeah, it was very impressive. That's just second half alone was a definite Jose Ramirez season in itself. You mentioned the pop-ups. You look at his launch angles and everything from early in the year and then how it dropped. And it actually dropped in a good way. It got to the place where we want Jose Ramirez to be launching baseball. So, yeah, I was looking forward to a full season of him this year, but we'll have to see how that plays out. Round three, who are you targeting in round three?
I love Patrick Corbin this year. And a big part of why I love Patrick Corbin this year is I think he's – The most likely outcome is he gives you exactly what Steven Strasburg does. If you look at what they've done over the last 2 years in particular, they've basically had identical rate stats, identical strikeout rates, identical walk rates. But Patrick Corbin has thrown about 70 more innings than Steven Strasburg over the last two seasons. Now, I know Strasburg was better last year, although it was pretty close. And I just think getting that 15 picks later, 13 picks later, whatever it is, I'd rather just wait. I'm thrilled if I get Patrick Corbin as my number one starter this year.
I think there's a lot to like about Corbin. I mentioned that auction over the weekend. Corbin went for 28 and Kershaw went for 28. Kershaw's going two picks ahead of Corbin here. Obviously, you pick Corbin, you like Corbin more. How close do you think those two are, though?
Oh, I think they're probably the same guy. You know, the strikeout rates, the walk rates are very close. So when it comes to a situation like that, I'd rather just wait.
True. Very true. I can feel you there. Wait two more picks and get him. My guy, and this is kind of a popular answer everywhere, but I've been snagging him places because a trend with my first two picks, I want to get as many steals, as many five category contributors as I can. So I'd be going after Starling Marte. I'm on board there. I know everyone's on him now. Kind of actually surprised to see his ADP still at 29. I figured he'd be going a little higher. But I think going to Arizona, he's going to love hitting in an offense that's going to be loaded around him, a team that's going to compete. There's a lot to like for Starling back in Arizona. Ketel Marte hitting behind him. He can hit 20-plus homers and steal you 20-plus bags. I know there's a couple other people are saying maybe he's getting too old or there's some drop-off coming. But I'm going to go with Starling Marte in the third round.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
All right, who's your fourth round pick?
I really like Ketel Marte.
There you go.
I know it's sort of, and I'm definitely on board with this. You don't want to pay up for the career year. And in Marte's case in particular, you know, it was such an outlier from what he'd done before. that it definitely makes sense to fade him. But he hit like a first rounder last year. So you're not paying for the career year. You're paying for some regression being baked in. And if you actually look at it, you know, the breakout kind of started in the second half of 2018. And he was someone that I was watching in 2018 because he had talked openly about wanting to change his swing. Him and Josh Bell were actually two guys I really liked coming into 2019 because both had talked, you know, their underlying skills looked pretty good. And they both talked about, you know, being swing change, launch angle guys, trying to hit the ball in the air with more authority. And in both cases, you saw that start to happen in the second half of 2018. You know, it's not always immediate. Sometimes there's an adjustment period. And you saw it in the second half of 2018, and then he fully broke out in 2019. Yeah, there's some regression coming. You know, I don't think he's going to hit 320 again. But if he hits 290 and most of the power stays there from last year, and he's still a threat to steal 12 to 15 bases, I love getting him in the fourth round.
Yeah, most definitely. I think the power is legit. You mentioned the swing change. I think there's a lot to like there. It's funny, some people aren't buying it because, you know, like you said, coming off a career year. But some guys, one thing I like to preach a lot is people forget Ketel Marte was actually a highly touted prospect for the Mariners. So it's not like it just came out of nowhere with him. He's actually a pretty good ball player, kind of put on some muscle there, and it showed last season. So I have no problem with that at all. Since this is a 12-team league, in reality, I probably, in a 15-team, we're taking a pitcher either this round or the last round.
Yeah.
Looking ahead, I like the pitchers kind of in the next round if I want to start there. So in round four, I will take another short position. I'll take Ozzie Albies at second base.
Sure.
I think he's a guy similar to Ketel Marte. I think it would be between the two of them to play my second base position. But I'll take Albies for maybe a little more steals upside. And I think he can still take another step in the power department. He's still kind of developing a little behind the development of maybe a Ketel Marte. So I like Ozzie. I love that Atlanta offense as well. Hitting between Acuna and Freeman will never stink. So Give me Ozzie Albies in round four.
I'm not sure people realize how young Ozzie Albies is. He only just turned 23 2 months ago. He is a baby by major league standards. And he might be younger than Luis Robert.
That's crazy to think about. Really take a step back. That's pretty wild.
It's pretty close. He might be a little bit. Yeah, he's about 5 months older, but only 5 months older than Luis Robert. He's came up in 2017 without a lot of hype, which is weird given that he was a big prospect, but not a lot of people were talking about him. 2018 has this incredible start to the season. Then he looks miserable for months, and it's just like, it's been so up and down. He's kind of settled in now, and he's 5 months older than the most hyped prospect in baseball right now.
That's such a good perspective to put it in because people forget those kind of things. And if you're a Braves fan, you have Acuna and Albies so young and locked up some pretty friendly deals. That's going to be fun in Atlanta for quite some time. Who would be your fifth round pick?
This is the easiest one of this entire exercise for me. Charlie Morton at 50th overall is just people are giving you money and just take it. Just accept, take Charlie Morton in the fourth round. Don't wait for him because he was, I think, the number seven starting pitcher last season. And that was, yes, it was the first time that he's pitched that many innings. Although you look at the last three seasons, really, he hasn't missed very many starts. And yes, he's old. Yes, you're baking in all those discounts. He's as good as basically any starting pitcher outside of that top five. There's risk, but you know what? There's risk with every single starting pitcher you draft. Look at the three aces that we've had go down with Tommy John surgery just since the start of February. That could happen to anyone. The risk is very well priced in for Charlie Morton.
I love it. That's who I was going to pick. That's why I kind of made the comment when I took Albies. You have Morton, you have Giolito, stuff like that, which is a good plan B. The Morton thing makes me laugh. Like you said, you know, go ahead and take him in round four. Why are people letting him fall this far? It's so silly, but so true. People are just ageist at times. It's just all there is to it. They see how old he is, and they're just waiting for him to break down. Like you hear the Justin Verlander arguments. You know, sure, he's got the hip injury, and that's no joke, but they're saying he's so old, and eventually it's going to fall apart, and I'm sitting there going, when? Because it just keeps doing it time and time again. And Morton's that guy. He's flat out said he's not going to pitch when he can't pitch anymore. So if he's out there throwing, I got no problem trusting him. So I'm going to make this one quick and simple. Morton would be mine as well. He's so darn good, so reliable on a very good Tampa Bay team. So I'm with you. Who's your round six?
Another one of my favorite players this season, Yoan Moncada. He's another guy coming off a career year. I think there are a lot of people who are skeptical. Him and his teammate, Tim Anderson, people look at the, I think Moncada was over 400 BABIP. Tim Anderson was right around there. And they just say, well, they're not going to do that again. And that's true. But Yoan Moncada has a 369 career BABIP. It's one of the highest in Major League history. And we're talking about, something like 1,400 plate appearances. It's not a gigantic sample, but it's not nothing. It's not just last year. He's been a high BABIP guy forever, and it makes sense. He's really athletic. He hits the ball really, really hard. And so I think he can hit 290 this season. I think there's 30 homer potential there. And I buy the improvements that he made as far as his strikeout rate goes, because it wasn't just, like I said earlier with Jose Ramirez, there was a reason why he struck out less. It wasn't just like, oh, he got better at recognizing pitches. Yoan Moncada was just a much more aggressive hitter in 2019. And in his case, that was a good thing, because he never had these hot sky high swinging strike rates like you see with a lot of the 30% strikeout guys. It was in like the 12% range, which is not great, but it's not, you can live with that. In his case, he was just taking a lot of third strikes. I think I saw something like in 2018, he had like 90 called third strikes or something like that. He was just putting himself in a lot of disadvantageous positions. And it's something, we'll get to, maybe we'll get deep enough to talk about Kevin Biggio, but he's another guy who I think would benefit from swinging the bat more. And in Moncada's case, if you talk about the upside, if you just want to talk about what Yoan Moncada's ceiling looks like, I think it looks like what we saw Trevor Story do the last 2 years, 30 plus homers. He's talked about, Yoan Moncada has talked about wanting to run more this season. So 20 steals isn't out of the question. Much better lineup. And I think he can hit 280, 290.
I'm with you. And the fact he has talked about running more is just, that ups him even more. If he keeps hitting the way he's hitting, then maybe throws in 15 bags. We're not talking about a 6th-round pick next year. We're talking like a 2nd or 3rd-round pick.
Yep.
He catapults it that high. So I'm a big fan of that. And the Kevin Biggio comment, I totally agree. That's something I talked about on a previous show. We were either the second base preview or just kind of looking at deeper targets. And when you break down Kevin Biggio, he's almost too patient at the plate. Like, he's a great OBP player because he walks a lot. You look at how many deep counts he gets into, how many two-strike counts where either strikes out looking, strikes out swinging, whatever. That's what the high strikeout rate comes from, because he's so patient. If you look at his first pitch swing rate, it's like next to none. Just all those kind of things you're mentioning, it's a great point, and some guys don't realize it. And you mentioned Moncada started doing that last year, and it really showed. I remember something I learned in Little League a long time ago. If the first good pitch you see is a fastball that's down the middle, swing. Why are we taking strikes? Why?
Yep.
It might be the only good pitch you see. So yeah. ask Barry Bonds about that back in the day. But this round six, I'll keep this quick now, is for listeners of the show, I might call it Bubba's round, because it's a lot of my guys in here. There's Matty Olson, who I'm in love with this year. Moncada, Bo Bichette, I'm a big fan of. But what I'll do is I'll double tap some pitching. After going Charlie Morton, I will go with Yu Darvish. He's another guy I've been grabbing a lot of this year. I buy into the fixes, because you hear it from the horse's mouth. He flat out said it before he started the run last year. He looked at film. He figured out what he was doing wrong, and he fixed it, and he just lights out, looked like the Yu Darvish of old. I buy into that going into this year, so Darvish should be my 6th-round pick. All right, who you got in round 7?
Round 7, actually, I had 3 picks that I really like, sweet, and they're all power guys. It's Giancarlo Stanton, who we talked about earlier. I think he's a great value here. I think he's a good value if he rises up another round or two even. And then, just like with Justin Verlander, just like with Charlie Morton, Nelson Cruz is going to stop hitting at some point. Yep. But it hasn't happened yet. And we're going on about 5 years of him being a great fantasy value. And it could end like David Ortiz, where at the end, Father Time is undefeated. But you can, you can avoid it. You can run out the clock, I guess, would be the way to say it. And, Nelson Cruz, he might just retire before he falls off. And, last year was his best year ever. There's no sign of slippage in the skills. I'll take Nelson Cruz at the 81st overall pick. If I'm picking in the second half of this round, the only problem is he is utility only, and yeah. that he's unlikely to ever not be utility only. So it can be tough to fit him on your roster. But you know what? With a bat like that, just find a way.
Pretty much. It's funny you mentioned him and David Ortiz. There's a Twitter poll out today. At what age did you give up on these two guys? And we're like 36, 37, 38. And everybody's answer pretty much was, where's the never option? So because they just keep hitting, like you said, it's crazy what they do. Mine here in round seven, since I did not take my Matt Olson in round six, I will take Jose Abreu in round seven. It's strictly a play on, you know, the position starts to get pretty shallow early. So I love Jose Abreu in this part of the draft.
I don't love Jose Abreu.
You're not an Abreu? Oh, let's talk.
No, it's for me, the biggest, I think it was the number seven first baseman last season. But when you look at how he was as just a hitter, I think he was 14th among first basemen who qualified for the batting title in OPS. And so I just look at that and I say, man, is he going to drive in 122 runs again? Not if he hits that way, even if with the lineup being good around him, he feels like you're probably going to get 30 homers from him. You're probably going to get a decent batting average from him. You're probably going to get a good amount of RBI, but I don't know if there's any upside there. He's older, I think, than people think. I think, is he 34?
That is true. He'll be 34. Yeah. He just turned 33.
Okay. So he's 33. So he's getting up there. We've seen guys like Joey Votto, Matt Carpenter kind of turn around very suddenly at that age. And I don't think there is a ton of room for error for Jose Abreu.
No, that's a valid argument. The room for error can be something. For me, it's more the consistent or usually consistent close to 30 home runs you're going to get. Yep. He's going to drive in runs. Obviously, I'm 100% in agreement. He's not driving in 123 this year. I'm not blowing that one out there, but I'm thinking there's still 100 plus runs driven in, 80 plus runs scored, and a decent batting average. So it's more of a consistency thing here because, like I said, if you don't take him or a Josh Bell or someone else here pretty quickly, that position gets ugly in a hurry. So it's strictly more of a positional play in that respect. When you get to round eight, who are you targeting?
I really like Sonny Gray this year. I know there doesn't seem to be a lot of people who believe in what he did last year, but you know, we have this piece that's run on CBS Sports for 2 years in a row now. You can find the full results there, but it's this proprietary stat that one of our writers came up with. It's called ACEs, and I can't remember what it stands for, but basically what he's trying to do is break pitching down into just the quality of a pitcher's repertoire. And so he looks at spin rate, release extension, velocity. He looks at the command plus metric that Stats has come out with that Eno Saris has written a lot about. He actually worked a little bit with Eno Saris on developing this, and Sonny Gray actually rated out in the 100th percentile last season, or in the, I guess, the top 1% of the league by this metric in terms of just stuff, the pitch mix. I think he kind of took what he learned from his very bad experience with the Yankees, where they tried to get him to throw his slider for strikes. It just didn't work. He talked a lot about that last spring training. I think he took what he learned from that and really was able to become the best version of himself. So I fully believe in Sonny Gray last season. He was another guy like Yu Darvish, like Jack Flaherty, like a couple other pitchers who had a really good second half. And he doesn't seem to be getting rewarded for it in the same way that a lot of the other guys do.
Yeah, it seems many aren't buying into Sonny Gray. And you mentioned the aces metric, Aaron Sassetta. He was on the show a week or two ago.
Oh, okay,
I've had him on after he updates aces twice now, each preseason, to talk about it. And it's quite the metric. I mean, we had some fun with it, Sonny Gray leading the way there. But then I said, well, at least you know it works, because if they want to argue Sonny Gray, Garrett Cole's like right there too. So exactly. It's really hard to argue those situations. But, yeah, it's a phenomenal metric, and I learned of it from Eno over a year ago, like you said. So It's a very nifty tool. I believe it's available at CBS Sportsline, so people can check that out. Yep. My round eight pick, it's one that I'm absolutely a big fan of as well, is Nick Castellanos. I know it's pretty, you know, common sense going from Detroit to Chicago showed big games. Going to Cincinnati is going to be just ridiculous. If you look at what he can do in that ballpark, his just overall hit tool has always been really well, really good. But the ballpark did get him at times in Detroit. It's just Captain Obvious stuff. So playing in Cincinnati, I'm a big fan of, and I think he's still a pretty nice value at this point. So I take Nick Castellanos in round eight. Who would be your round nine pick?
Well, when I wrote this, Nick Castellanos' ADP was 97. So he was my round nine pick. So no, I love Nick Castellanos. You know, you look at the dimensions in Comerica Park, and you look like down the lines, and you know, it doesn't seem like it should be a horrible place for a power hitter, but Nick Castellanos is not one of those power hitters who's pulling the ball to create his power. You know, he's not Mike Moustakas. He's got all fields power, and especially into the alleys, and that's where Comerica Park just killed him. And he talked openly about it last season, right before he was traded. He was like, this park's a joke. And so I fully buy into him. I think the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati is going to be, it's going to do wonders for him. I could see something like what JD Martinez did last year.
Yeah, from 100%. I think it's a great comp. I think it's a great comp. Because we saw what JD did once he left Detroit, and it could be a very similar situation there. So I think that's a phenomenal comp. I'll just say mine quickly in round nine. It's not great, but let me see. Let me do the math here. 90 to 108. Oh, he qualifies there. Okay, never mind. I'm going to change my mind here. You mentioned him earlier with Yoan Moncada. I'll take my middle infielder with Tim Anderson.
Love Tim Anderson.
I understand the arguments of him not being able to duplicate that batting average, but I kind of ask, why not? Or at least why not something close to that? Like, if you want to give it a little regression, sure. But he's just a pure hitter. He's going to hit the ball hard. He's going to be in a great spot in that lineup. The power, I think, is legit. Another guy, we talked about Marte, and once a number one pick. People forget about those things. Very highly touted prospect. So I do like Tim Anderson quite a bit. I'd have him at middle infielder right there.
Yeah, he's not the slap hitter he used to be. You know, his average exit velocity jumped almost 3 miles per hour last season. His hard hit rate was nearly 10 points higher than it was the year before. And his expected batting average on Baseball Savant was .294. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a guy who could hit .290 with 20 homers and 20 steals, maybe even more. That's a great pick here. I also really like Carlos Correa here because you finally don't have to pay an elite price. And yes, he's injury prone, just like Giancarlo Stanton. It's the same argument. If Carlos Correa plays a full season, which he hasn't done in quite some time, but if he manages to do it, we're probably going to pick him as a third or fourth rounder the following season. He's been like a 930 OPS two of the last 3 years. The only real exception there was that 2018 when he was just playing hurt the entire season and just was never right. If he finally does have a fully healthy season, he's going to be a huge value here.
I agree. It's one of those that either people are just saying, no, I'm over Cray. He's burned me so many times. But people also need to realize he was burning you because of where you drafted him. Like you mentioned, you're getting him at a price that matters. And like I've tried to stay positive over this whole period that we're in right now, and like I'm hoping for baseball, I'm planning for it. I know you guys are doing work at CBS. You keep grinding on it. If we want to make light of the situation, we're finally going to have a Carlos Correa-sized season. So let's just have fun with it and see what happens. He might be able to play a full season now. Just look at the positives in this, and that could be a steal of a pick. And that's kind of what you're looking at these times. Now, I don't want to go through every round, so I have a couple other questions I want to talk about. I want people to go read your article, obviously. But it's a fun exercise to kind of get an idea. You mentioned Kevin Biggio. Are there any kind of later round targets that really stood out to you as values just like off the top of your head right now?
Love Franmil Reyes. Love Corey Seager. Corey Seager going in, I guess that's the 12th round, like 135th overall. He's someone I didn't love before because he doesn't necessarily have a profile that is super oriented for roto leagues. He's a great points league guy. But, you know, he got off to such a bad start last season in April. He had like a 640 OPS through like the first couple of games of May. Then he kind of started figuring it out. And from like May 4th on, which is a bit of an arbitrary date, I'll admit. But from that point on, I think it was like a 900 OPS, 280 average. The per 160 game pace was like 28 homers, 120 RBI, 110 runs. Like, it was the Corey Seager that we've wanted to see. And in his instance, I feel like you have a good reason why he got off to such a bad start. He was coming back from hip and Tommy John surgery. I'll grant the guy a slow start under those circumstances.
Yeah, no, Seager's always one I have a hard time pulling the trigger on. But similar to the Correa argument, he's kind of becoming worth a value now, where he's in a range where I can take him, where before it was easy for me to be like, I'm just not going to mess with him. So I can totally see that. And Franmil, I'm all about. I actually wrote an article at Roto Baller about a month ago now, where I said it was a debate between Aaron Judge and Franmil Reyes. And I said, give me Franmil Reyes. And this was before the Aaron Judge injuries. So that became prevalent, because you get a similar player. I get you Judge a full season's better in the grand scheme of it. But what you usually get from a year-to-year basics with Franmil, very, very similar. So something that stood out to me there. So we're going to go check out Chris's article on CBS.com and go get all that good stuff. I saw you tweet about something today, and it's not on the outline. So I just want to ask you about it, because I'm a Twitter fiend. Like, I sit there, I'll just like get bored and scroll Twitter. And sometimes it's very good. Sometimes it's just very filthy. And I enjoy your timeline and others, because you just do kind of fun stuff. Like, I'm not into the record thing. I've never done it. I understand it. I listen to podcasts and stuff, and I'm not music. So I'm not going to ask you those questions, because you would be an expert there. But what I'm going to ask you that stood out to me, and it's kind of off of your draft you guys did yesterday, I believe, about the fictional characters.
Yeah,
and I read your article on it, and again, I'm not going to go over that. I want people to read it themselves. But you mentioned The Sandlot, and you tweeted this is your number one movie over Major League. Now, what I want to ask is, The Sandlot is a phenomenal baseball movie. I love it. I will not argue with anybody with it at number one. But there's a lot of people with differing opinions all over the board on The Sandlot. What makes it your number one?
The best sports movies aren't really about sports. You know, like, I'm not a huge Field of Dreams fans, but it goes without saying that's a baseball movie, but it's really about the relationships between fathers and sons. And, you know, in the case of The Sandlot, it's a movie about childhood, and it's a really real, like, I really love a lot of, even though I'm, you know, 31 years old, I still really love a lot of the great art that defined my childhood, stuff like Calvin and Hobbes and the Phantom Tollbooth and Peanuts and stuff like that. I still go back to that stuff. And so The Sandlot is just like a perfect distillation of what it's like to be a kid during the summer. You know, it takes place in the 1960s. It was made in the 1990s, but it could define, you know, being a kid in any era, especially, you know, maybe it's different now because people are a little more scared to let their kids run all over the world. But, you know, when I was a kid, we were still, you know, you left the house in the morning, you came back when the sun came down, and you were out all day. And that's exactly what The Sandlot just typifies for me. It's just like the perfect distillation of what childhood is like at its best.
No, I love that answer. I remember being in school, people bring their gloves, we kind of form our own teams, or after school, we go find a cul-de-sac and play in, or an empty like playground to go play ball. So I just wanted to get your opinion on it, because I love The Sandlot. I think it symbolize childhood in a big, big way. And I just liked how you said even more than Major League, because like, you already knew when you tweeted that you were going to get a million questions on Major League, because I love Major League. I think it's a great movie.
It's a phenomenal movie.
Yeah. Any movie that you can quote stuff, it's there for a reason. But I like The Sandlot. I'm with you. It's just got that other – it's not all baseball. It's a little bit of everything to kind of bring you back. And I wanted to ask you it because I'm trying to do kind of other podcasts besides just strictly fantasy. And I've had a guest on, Ben Palmer, who did a top 15 at Pitcher List the baseball movies. And last week we did our 11 through 15. This week we're going to do 10 through 6. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about here just for a second. Yes. And it tied into your draft, because I love your draft. You picked Snoopy, which would threw me for a curveball, because I never would have even thought of it, but it made sense when you mentioned it. And then you had three major league players, but the fact you picked your first two as basically the rivals or the
bad guys,
it was awesome. Like, I was like, this is great, because most people would not go that route. So I thought that was really, really cool stuff there. And then before we wrap up, we don't need to do top five, but give me like, what are a couple things you find yourself doing now that you're kind of stuck at home that you usually didn't like find yourself doing? What are a couple things that you're maybe new hobbies or something you got going on?
Oh boy, I've been trying to get back into playing guitar because I kind of let that fall by the wayside the last couple of years. But really, it's just been watching a lot of TV with my wife. We started watching Game of Thrones. She's already watched it. I watched like the last season just because I wanted to be involved in the conversation that everyone was having. And turns out that was not the right season to watch if you want to like Game of Thrones. It was bad. Like even as someone who wasn't invested in the show, it was just horrible storytelling. But, you know, I'm about six episodes into the first season. It's great. We've just been kind of binge watching a lot of things. We binge watched Lord of the Rings over the weekend. Cool. We've been watching a lot of Great British Baking Show, which is just, if you ever need like a stress release, if you ever just want to feel good about the world, the Great British Baking Show is just the most delightful TV show. It's not like the American cooking shows where, you know, like there's literally a show called Cutthroat Kitchen where you're just trying to screw everyone over. Great British Baking Show, it's like if one of the contestants needs help, like everyone will be like, I'll help you. What do you need me to do? And it's just they just drop a big tent into a field somewhere in Britain, and there's just like goats and lambs bleeding, like making goat and lamb noises, not like bleeding with a D.
Okay, I thought they were like, wow.
No, they're just happy frolicking in the field while these people are making like these really bizarre British desserts, because I don't want to offend anyone, but there's one that looks like a brain. I won't go too far into it, but a lot of their desserts are pretty gross looking. Yeah. But the show itself is just, it's like a balm for the soul.
Nice. Yeah, no, I've been asking a lot of people that question just because we all have extra time on our hands, it seems like. So I'm kind of curious on how people are occupying those times in this weird time, because you got to try to find the best out of all of it. So it's an interesting story. And then we're not going to talk about this today. I'd love to have you on again sometime to chat about baseball and whatnot. But one thing I want to chat about you with, I saw you. I need to do more research to be ready to talk about it because I love the topic. I've never really made the list because I refuse to, but I'm seeing many do it. Now I want to, but I want to talk to you about your Marvel cinematic idea, theories and list.
I've got lots of thoughts on that. That's another one that we rewatched, I think, twice in the last year.
See, that's my thing, is that's a whole other podcast that we don't need to start right now.
We could do it. I could do 3 hours on that.
That's what I'm saying.
So let me know when you want.
Yeah, we will do that. I think that could be a lot of fun. I think to kind of distract us from everything, and so many angles you can take on that. So we will do that sometime. But before we wrap this up, why don't you like remind everybody what you got going on over at CBS, where they can find you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. We're pretty much writing multiple times a day. We should have at least two new articles up every day, reacting to news. Or just kind of we're kind of in perpetual draft prep mode at this point. So we'll still be there every single day. Fantasy Baseball Today podcast with me, Adam Azer, and Scott White. We're still doing that five times a week. So, you know, there's lots of places you can follow me on Twitter at @CTowerCBS. Warning, I tweet a lot, not necessarily all about baseball.
Well, it's okay. If they're listening to this show, I do the same thing. So I think they're used to people like that. So it's not the end of the world there. But, Chris, I really appreciate it. It was fun chatting with you. We'll definitely do this again sometime.
It was a great time. Thanks for having me.
No problem, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 264 with Chris Towers of CBS Sports. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.